Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
Vaccaro slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. A thunderous dunk. Ed Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chasetown Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers play preseason basketball in just 15 days. Media day, 1 week away, which means we are firmly in season preview season. Joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so much the calm before the storm. It's like we almost don't have anything to talk about because we've talked through all the Cavs stuff we can talk through at this point. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some stuff, but it's like it's time to see it in action now. Media Day is coming up. We got some fun stuff coming up for Media Day coverage on the Chasetown that we'll ideally be able to share soon.
I'm pumped for that.
And it's coming. It's we're so close. And in the meantime, you know, I just feel like I'm killing time.
It's so close, but also feels so far away. Like, I want this to be here right now. But I do got to give a big thanks to both Connor and Colin in our Discord because they helped inspire today's episode, asking us a question, which, again, for all our listeners, if you do want to join the Chase Downs Discord chat, send a screenshot of your review anywhere you leave podcast reviews to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will send you one. But today, we are going to be talking about one team in each conference that we believe will overachieve and underachieve this season, as well as one player from both conferences that will overachieve and underachieve this season. And then to top it all off, Carter and I will unleash a hot take for this season. So let's start with one team in the Eastern Conference that you believe, Carter, will overachieve this season.
Oh, I thought this was underachieve. Overachieve and underachieve.
Both.
Okay.
Do you want me to stall for time? Because you misunderstood the assignment?
Well, I was just prepping my brain for underachieve, and you know I'm a negative Nancy,
that's
Justin.
That's true, but you know, I want to push you to be better, and that's
you know
what this
team
is really
I don't,
about.
What team I don't mind at all?
What's that?
Is the Boston Celtics. I think they made a lot of pretty smart moves this year.
Okay.
I think Josh Richardson's a helpful player. I think like he had that 1 year in Miami where everyone like thought he was maybe a bit more than what he is, and ever since everyone's been a little bummed out, and now he's just like a salary dump guy.
You mean that season when Philly traded him for traded Jimmy Butler to get him essentially?
Yeah. And you know, he's been kind of a bummer since, but like I think that he's a really helpful player. I think they needed more helpful players on the wing outside of Tatum and Brown. I think that Dennis Schroeder is, you know, he's not my favorite player, but like, I think he's going to give you as much as Kemba gave you last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think the five spot still remains a bit of a concern, you know.
Honestly, sorry to cut you off. Do you think Schroeder is going to be a better player than Kemba this season? Because I think he will.
Well, Kemba, it's not a high bar, you know, and like, I think that, like, the same concerns probably hold, which is that the team doesn't have a true get you into your offense point guard. Mm-hmm. And Tatum and Brown haven't quite become that, you know. But I do think that, like, the roster up and down makes a little more sense than it did last year. You know, if Horford has anything left. And by the way, I thought he was helpful for OKC last year.
Mm-hmm. He was.
You know, there's another player whose stock is perhaps a little lower than it should be publicly. And then some moves on the margins. Like, Wancho, like, if the jumper ever gets there, he could be a pretty solid player. You know, Robert Williams looked really good. As much as we all love to roast Celtics Twitter, I thought Peyton Pritchard was pretty good for them last year. So,
yep.
Like, they have a lot of players who are pretty good. I think the vibes were off on that team last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think if anything is going to tank them, it is the vibes. Like, they just didn't quite feel like a happy team last year.
Yeah. And you never know how things are going to go with a rookie head coach, right? It's a different environment. You don't know how things
like
are going to mesh.
I didn't see like a lot of tears being shed from that roster to lose Brad Stevens. Maybe there was more grum. Maybe it wasn't as perfect as maybe we thought. Maybe maybe the interpersonal stuff wasn't there. Maybe the Ainge stuff had just run its course. But
you might
was
also
off
not get
team.
An obituary when the guy's still staying in the organization.
Yeah, that's like, fair. That's fair. But like, I don't know. Like, maybe they just needed a shakeup. And like, I think the talent is there. Like, they're probably a top five talented team in the East, and they didn't play like it year. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm gonna bet on some regression there, and like, that's a team that I think would do pretty damn well.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Yeah, the team that I'm thinking of falls into the same category, basically, where everything was off from a chemistry standpoint last year. Bad luck with injuries as well. And I just think that you're going to see positive regression with this team, like Boston. I think Boston's a great pick, and I agree with everything you said. But for me, it's the Indiana Pacers. I think they have a really, really solid, deep roster.
I love Indy. I always do.
Like, I just think they got a lot of guys. I know TJ Warren isn't going to be ready for the beginning of the season, but they have wings. Like, Jeremy Lamb is maybe their 11th player. Brissett looked really good for them last year. Kind of one of those pleasant surprises that they got from the Raptors 905. And, like, Brogdon, LeVert, Sabonis, Turner. Like, there's just so many guys. TJ Warren off, or not TJ Warren, TJ McConnell, both of the TJs. Coming off the bench. Like, there's a lot of depth there, and I think with Rick Carlisle, you're just going to see more stability. Like, Rick Carlisle raises your floor so much that with so many teams kind of in this play-in mix that are trying to integrate new parts and whatnot, I just think Indy has always been such a steady organization, and bringing in a steady head coach and a very good one in Rick Carlisle is going to have them...
floor one. Like, that dude always gets more out of his team than it should. His teams are always a little more than the sum of their parts. And, like, this is a team that's kind of been begging to be more than the sum of their parts for a while. Like, they've kind of been the sum of their parts for a while.
Agreed.
Which is, like, a pretty good sum, you know? And they've been a pretty good team, obviously, last year notwithstanding, which had a lot of stuff beyond a bad head coach. They were really banged up. It just
but
wasn't
even
quite
with
their
everything
year.
Going wrong, they still made the plan, which is why I feel like if things just break right and you have a coaching upgrade, this is going to be a team that I could see them escaping the plan. Like, I could see them getting up to that 5-6 seed range.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally with you, man. I think both of us definitely have one in those top six that we expect to drop out in the East, and I'm sure that's going to be your pick to underachieve. And in fact, I picked around it because I was so sure that was going to be your pick for the underachiever. And yeah, I just like this Indy team. I think it's a front office that never is trying to do anything but win.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think losing seasons are part of that franchise's DNA for the most part. So I love that pick. I actually like it more than mine.
I'm going to surprise you a little bit here. Just I was going to ask whether or not you want to go overachieving in the West and just stay positive at the start. But I think
no,
you guessed
East,
wrong.
Baby.
I think you guessed wrong. My underachieving team is the Toronto Raptors because.
Really? Well, hold on. Underachieving relative to what? They're over under.
It's like
is posted 38. At 35. And it's 35 and a half, I believe, is what
That's
they open.
That's too high.
At.
That's too high. I think this team is going to stink. And I think some of it is going to be by choice because we saw last year that they did not have interest in going for the play-in. I think Fred VanVleet has been a chucker for the majority of his career, and some of that has been hidden by the fact that they had such a steady hand in Kyle Lowry. And if they do what's kind of anticipated, which is moving Goran Dragic at the start of October once Dallas is able to trade for him, essentially, I think at that point it's going to really signal that, hey, this is going to be a transitional year. I'm high on them long term, but this is just a team that with so many teams that are pushing for the play-in, I don't think that they want to be in that mix. Like, how hard are they going to fight for that 9-10 seed when they could help juice the rebuild and add to their promising young core with another high pick? So for that reason, as well as Pascal Siakam and all that, I just think people are a little too high on this Toronto team. It's funny to see Raptors fans that have talked about how Kyle Lowry is a top two most important player in the Eastern Conference for the last decade, and he means so much and really moves the needle. But now all of a sudden that he's gone, it's not going to hurt the team. No, they're still going to win 40 games, even though they earned a fourth overall pick last year. Not that well. Like, I know they're going to Toronto, but this is a team that I think is really going to underachieve. Like, I could see them being 10 games under that over-under total.
I just think you're being, I think this is a little bit of an overreaction because I thought they were better than their record last year. I mean, they had a point differential of minus 0.4.
Right, but so many of those wins,
games under 500. Like,
so many of those wins came when Norman Powell was on the team. Kyle Lowry was on the team. Like, Gary Trent Jr.
I know you're not a Gary Trent fan, and that has to factor into your choices, into your reaction here. Also, I mean, I would say if they took Suggs instead of Barnes, even though I preferred Barnes as a prospect, I think I would think they would overachieve more this year.
I would agree as well.
But Barnes, I think they're going to give minutes to, and I think he is going to hurt their offense when he's on the floor early on in his career. I'd be surprised if he is a helpful offensive player, much like Isaac Okoro was not a helpful offensive player last year.
Was not a helpful offensive Okoro. You know what? But this year we're going to get helpful offensive Okoro. But you know what? That is one of the consideration factors for me as well, is if Pascal Siakam is missing the first month or two and Scottie's out there, if they don't get off to a hot start, are they going to chase a plan? If Pascal Siakam was healthy at the start of the year, they got off to a good start and they kind of rode that out, I could see that. In fact, like Masai literally made that decision in the past when he thought he was tanking, trading away Rudy Gay. His intention was to trade Kyle Lowry at the same time, but because the team started winning, they adjusted on the fly and went for the playoffs. I just think this is going to be the inverse, where if they get off to a bad start with Siakam out, I can see them pulling the plug and taking a more long-term approach this season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't hate the pick, but And you know, it makes a lot of sense more organizationally than like the roster to me. It's like, you picked an organization that never tries to lose in Indiana for your overachiever, and then you picked an organization which seems kind of okay with it.
Yeah.
Psst. You know, at least they were at the end of last season. No, they got a prize. They didn't get an uber mega prize. You know, everyone kind of agrees this was a 2-3 player draft at the top. And you know, maybe Masai is still looking for that uber mega prize, and he'll make decisions that push them in that direction. You know, it's hard to know, but I can't fault the pick.
I mean, and some of this is also my Cavs bias kicking in as well. I need to believe that Toronto isn't going to try to be good, because that's one less team to try to overtake.
I wasn't going to air it out like that.
I'm self-aware. If I have many faults, not being self-aware is not one of them. Who's your pick for underachiever?
The Chicago Bulls, they won 43% of their games last season. They're over under, as it currently stands, is 41.5. I think they're going to win 43% of their games again this season. I think they are exactly as good, which is to say not very. And I know all the reasons, and this is where I got burned. I got burned with this on the Hawks last year, so maybe I'm just not going to learn my lesson. But I think they experienced a outlier year for Zach LaVine. I think Vucevic has never been a player that is particularly conducive to winning, and that's a terrible defensive pairing for your two best players. I think Lonzo is still riding Laker hype. I think he's a helpful player. I don't think he's a wildly helpful player. Same with Caruso. I just don't. And then DeRozan is past his prime, and the stuff he's good at, other than, you know, a little bit of extra playmaking in the half court, I just don't see what he's adding. And I do feel like he takes away from a lot.
There's redundancies there for sure.
The redundancies are there and actually harm there. You know, LaVine's not going to have room to operate if they've got Caruso and DeRozan around him on the perimeter. Those are two dudes you just don't have to guard from three. Vucevic can shoot, and something he's gotten better at, but like, it's also kind of one of him getting to eat in the post on occasion. And I just don't think this team makes that much sense, and it feels like a really expensive team that has these really big ideas about what they are, and I don't see any of it. I don't think Zach LaVine has elevated himself at all in my mind as like a star tier player.
Really?
I think he won me over
a little bit last year.
I think if there's one spot I'm wrong there, is I did feel like he really like started relishing playing defense on Team USA. Like I was impressed by his effort level there, but like, I just like, if you don't have great feel for the game, and I don't think Zach LaVine does, I just am gonna have a hard time thinking you're a star, you know? I get that the numbers are good, but I still don't feel the impact from him on a night-to-night basis, and like, I just think this team is full of a bunch of empty calorie guys right now.
I think you are going to be not loud wrong, but I think you're going to be wrong similar way to how we were wrong. We were both wrong about the Hawks last season.
Yeah, like, and they're replaced, and that's the counter, I think, is they're replacing a bunch of dudes who weren't any good at basketball for their team.
Mm-hmm. Well, the big loss, pretty good. The big loss for Chicago is losing Thad Young. Like, he made a big impact for them. I don't mind bringing in Derek Jones Jr. It's flat out weird. Like, there's been reporting that Chicago just had no interest in Nance, and I find that to be really, really weird that that was on the table and they chose to go with Derek Jones Jr. Whatever. I can't.
Yeah, but you look at this roster. I got their minutes leaders from last season up right now, and obviously some of it's a little wonky because of all their trades. But so Coby White played way too many minutes. He played 30 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Which is banana pancakes for a player that is as not good as Coby White is at this point in his career. But then it's like most of the guys you want to see up there, Levine, Vucevic, for a small stretch, obviously, Pat Williams, Garrett Temple, who was solid for them, Markkanen, Tice, Wendell Carter, Thad Young, Tomas Satoransky. Like, these are mostly pretty all right players that played minutes for them. It's not
losing
like,
losing Sato hurts maybe
a little bit, but you're getting Lonzo, that's an upgrade.
That's an upgrade.
But here's what I'm saying. Here's the larger discussion is I think we were so wrong on the Hawks because we made that mistake of, yeah, the fits weren't perfect, but they were replacing dudes who weren't NBA players or very, very marginal NBA players with NBA players 1 through 10.
Yeah, well, my beef with the Hawks was I like their young players, and I didn't like the idea of signing guys that are going to take minutes away from them. But
sure,
it just worked out that the injuries kind of necessitated. Everyone got to eat. I don't think
you know what I'm saying. Like, I think that's, but we were wrong in their win total.
Correct.
From that perspective, because we undervalued just how crappy the dudes playing with Trae Young were before, and like. But I don't really know if that's the case here. Like, replacing most of a season of Wendell Carter with Vucevic, sure. Replacing a lot of Coby White minutes with a lot of Caruso and Lonzo minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like a win because Coby White just hasn't quite figured it out yet.
Agreed.
But is it enough to really bump them in a meaningful way? I'm just skeptical, man.
I don't think Levine
is exactly what he was last year, plus all this stuff. Sure, but if there's any regression to the jump shooting or to the shot making, it feels like a tough task.
I think they are going to struggle to start the season. I think it's going to take them a while to develop chemistry and whatnot. I don't think they're going to over or underachieve. I think they're just going to achieve. Like, I think they're going to struggle first half of the season.
Win total's 41.5 as seniors.
That's about right. Like, I think second half of the season, Chicago's going to start clicking and you won't want to play them. It's unfortunate that the Cavs don't play them early on. I just feel like
they're a team anybody in the league can beat on any given night.
Yeah, but I also feel like if things are clicking for them offensively, they can beat you. So how they use Vucevic is going to be really important, because if they relegate him to, like, stand in the corner and space for us, that's going to be a problem because he's probably their second best player, and someone that can really help make things hum in the half court. So I don't hate the pick. I see the path to you being right. I just think, like the Hawks last year, they're going to underachieve to start the season and then come on strong in the second half. Like, with Atlanta, I think some of that had to do with the injuries they had early on. I know there was the coaching change, but the coaching change also happened at the same time everybody got healthy, which I think gets overlooked a little bit when talking about that season. But I think we're going to see a similar thing for Chicago. Who do you have overachieving in the Western Conference?
I would like you to go first because I want to hear who you pick, because I'm still kind of between a couple names.
I'm going to go with the Dallas Mavericks. I think they're being
really,
yeah, I think they're being counted out just a little bit because of losing in the first round drama. Last season, the drama that they've had. Jason Kidd, obviously a big question mark there. But some of that record really did have to do with how hard they got hit with COVID last season. Like, that was a team that got really sick and really fell off. I think Jalen Brunson is a really solid player. I think he's only going to get better. Luke is going to get better. I don't think Porzingis will be as bad as he was last season. And I think that this is a better roster than people give them credit for. And yes, Jason Kidd was not a great coach in Milwaukee, but at the same time, he did do some imaginative things. Like, when he was in Brooklyn, he had Paul Pierce playing the four before kind of having a forward there was in style. Getting the ball into Giannis's hands was obviously something that paid long-term dividends for Milwaukee. I think sometimes they go a little too far with that, but I don't think that he's necessarily as unimaginative as some people have portrayed. I'm not a big Jason Kidd fan, but I just think there's enough talent there, and especially if they end up adding Dragic, I think they have a really, really high baseline level here, especially if Luka Doncic continues to improve.
I mean, especially if Luka's happier. I mean, it's no secret that Luka and Rick had their clashes, and, you know, J. Kidd seems like someone that is going to be a you know, the stars seem to like playing for this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like when there have been complaints, it's been on the periphery of the roster. That's not to underplay any of the stuff, because some of it's really not like happy stories.
Yeah.
You know, like I do think that Luka seems to, you know, at least, you know, respect his coach in this instance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that you're right that they were super COVID hit, and ideally that doesn't happen again. It just, like, I just can't shake the feeling that this is the year where if there is anxiety about keeping Luka, this is the one where it really takes root.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah. Where everyone just goes, oh, they're just like, they don't have a ton in the war chest, and they're not super good, and Porzingis seems broken, and, like, you know, like, there's just, it just feels like the vibes are so bad with that team. As of late,
mm-hmm.
That like if they're gonna have a big scary, or is this gonna be the way it is in Dallas kind of year, then I think it's gonna be this one.
I think there would be more of a likelihood of that occurring if the West wasn't in such a weird state, like Jamal Murray potentially missing the entire season. You've also got Kawhi missing the season. Like I think there's avenues there. Like if Denver was fully healthy, I think that they'd be a juggernaut in the Western Conference. Same with the Clippers. I think those would be really strong teams. Those two kind of falling out of the top four, or at least not being as firmly entrenched in the top four, I think creates a route for Dallas to be competitive and to maybe get home court in the first round. Like I just feel like there's an opportunity there. And if there's at least good vibes coming out of Luka with this coaching change, I think that's going to be enough to kind of right the ship. I think what you're describing is more likely to occur next season. I think if they don't get some real help in there, I think there's a definite ceiling on this roster.
That's fair. It's an interesting choice for sure, because I do feel like you're zagging here.
Listen, if we're unleashing some takes, I want to go a little outside of expectations. Like, I'm sure you thought I was going to pick the Knicks for underachieving.
Yeah, I definitely did think that. And honestly, I'm kind of cold on that take, just from the perspective of, I just think they're just going to be what they are.
I think they're going to be solid.
I think they will be better than kind of we originally thought. I think I got a pretty good zag overachiever pick in the West, and I've really settled in on it. How about the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Because this
is a team who missed Karl-Anthony Towns missed 22 games.
Mm-hmm.
D'Angelo Russell missed 30 games. Malik Beasley missed 35 games.
Yep.
And those are the three best players. their minutes leaders were Anthony Edwards at 2,300 minutes, which is a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
For a 72-game season. He played like 33 a game or 32 a game. Ricky Rubio was their second minute leader at this stage of his career, and he wasn't even that healthy, by the way.
Yeah.
Karl-Anthony Towns, while missing 30 game or 22 games, by the way, then Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Malik Beasley, Josh Okogie.
Man, Jaden McDaniels might be starting at the four for them, though.
Yeah, I get it. I get that the roster isn't perfect, but like I do think that, like, we all agreed that D'Angelo Russell kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so sure that's the case, especially when, like, you just look at the offensive firepower of those three together. And the fact that Kat has gotten so good at playmaking, he averaged just under 5 assists last year.
Right.
That I just feel like he is kind of an offensive floor raiser.
Mm-hmm.
And like they're going to score a ton of points. Now the defense is going to be kind of crappy, but you know who I liked at the end of last year? Anthony Edwards. I thought he learned a lot.
Yeah.
And got a lot better. Like the talent pedigree on this team is not terrible. Now, I think that if you were just to ask me compared to like their win total, which is set at 32.5, which I thought pretty surprisingly high.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think NBA Twitter, I think, you know, if you listen to all the over under pods at the beginning of the year, you're going to hear everyone going under on Minnesota at that number, because I do think that's probably a little high of a number to set, but I think that's a perfectly reasonable goal for this team, that 32 to 35 win range.
Yeah, it's funny because
the talent level is not horrific.
If they hit that total, I do feel like it would be overachieving relative to expectations.
Which is funny, because that, I mean, if that is our baseline, then I guess I'm kind of putting my foot in my mouth a little bit here. But yeah. I wanted to do this based
off of public perception, because I know you got the win totals, but then you get the group think that happens every time win totals come out, where everyone's either hammering an over or an under, and like the consensus kind of shifts. So I don't hate this pick. I think you might be onto something. I will say where this goes wrong for you is just how thin this roster is. Like look at that second unit, you got Beverly, Okogie, Vanderbilt, Naz Reid, Torian Prince. Like not only, you just don't have a lot of reliable options there. And these are guys that miss time. Jalen Noel maybe is probably like their 11th man or might be in that mix, depending on how Prince looks. But I do think there is enough.
Heard his name a lot when the Cavs played Mini late in the year. Yes. There's a lot of Jalen Noel in the last year.
Yes. Yes, there was. But like I could see a scenario where this works. And that starting lineup should have a lot of offensive firepower. So in what's looking like a bit of a down year for the Western Conference, maybe there's a path to it. But I do think that that's at least an interesting pick. It gives me something to chew on. I'll need to think about it a little bit.
I'm not sure I'm all the way on board, but like I was just like thinking, like I think everyone just thinks they're just gonna suck forever, and I think there's a world in which they get. They're scrappy this year, and I don't think a lot of people are thinking of them as a scrappy team.
You know,
that's a tough out.
That's a pretty good pick. And thanks, I'm buddy. Going to go with a historically scrappy team to underachieve in the Western Conference, and that's the Memphis Grizzlies. I know Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. missed a bunch of time last year. They made some moves this offseason that I think some people feel were lateral moves. I do feel like going from Jonas Valanciunas to Steven Adams is a big downgrade. But just the assumption that you're going to get more Jaren and Ja, I think has people thinking that this is going to be a team that, hey, they snuck into the play-in, made the playoffs last year, maybe they'll take a step forward. I think this is a team that's taking a step back. I think it's a little bit of a calculated step back, understanding where they're at. Yes, Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. are really nice pieces, and they've drafted well outside of them. I just think that this is a team that's going to struggle this year. I really do think Jonas Valanciunas was a really important piece for them last year. And, like, yeah, Ja and Jaren missed time, but do you trust them to stay healthy for an entire season as well? And how are things going to go there? Also, Kyle Anderson had basically his only good shooting season last year. How much do we trust that? It's just a team that I think is going to take a little bit of a calculated step back. Still high on them long term. I really like rooting for Memphis, and this is a team that I'm emotionally invested with the Canadians that they have, and Ja Morant being such a fun player. But I just don't trust them to make the playoffs this season. I think they're going to take a little bit of a step back.
That's fair, and it was going to be my pick, but I knew that's one I did predict that you were going to pick based on prior discussions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the counter, of course, is if Jaren Jackson has not been the player we thought he was going to be.
Yep.
While showing little flashes of it, of him being like way more than the player I thought he was going to be. So, you know, I feel like he's kind of the fulcrum on which their season's going to turn.
How much do you blame the struggles that he's had on Ben Golliver for giving him such a terrible nickname?
What was his nickname?
He just calls him Jaren. He's like, I think we should just call him Jaren. He's like, I'm not going with any nicknames. We're just giving him Jaren. He wants him to be like Cher.
What a weird guy.
What a weirdo.
I love him. you know, I think the rebounding stuff has, I'd been kind of screaming about the rebounding stuff for a while. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. I do like moving. I don't necessarily love picking up Steven Adams' contract, but it did feel like Jonas kind of operated as a bit of a crutch for this team. Like, he was kind of their best player last year in a way that was like, this team's never going to go anywhere if Jonas Valanciunas is kind of your best player. So like,
I think it was the right move.
Yeah,
I just
down
think it's
with moving on and just kind of pulling away that safety net.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I think there's a world in which they get better. You know, Desmond Bain was really good for them in limited minutes. He played about 20 minutes a game. I thought he definitely has room to grow. De'Anthony Melton, who I adore with the rest of NBA Twitter, didn't get a lot of run because they had too many guys last year. It does feel like they've done a little bit of consolidating here. But yeah, I get it. I get the point. I get where you're going with this. I'm just not all the way there. I think they're going to perform. I think that's a team that, if everyone stays healthy, is going to get a little bit better. I mean, hell, what if Brandon Clark comes back and is not completely busted?
You know what? I know you haven't given your underachieving team in the West yet, but I will say that Brandon Clark is my pick for overachieving in the Western Conference.
Jesus Christ, you really got to thinking about this one. I was not going to go that deep.
I think it's going to be Brandon Clark. I think they've opened up an opportunity for him, and he is going to reassert himself as a really meaningful player. I don't think we have to go too in-depth on that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hold off. Let's hold off. Let me get to my underachiever first, and I think it's the Golden State Warriors.
Ooh, hoo, hoo.
Over under a 50, a year older, while somehow a year younger for the rest of the roster. It's still a bunch of kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they want to play Wiseman, Moody, and Kuminga, that's three dudes who are like 20 in your 8-man rotation that are supposed to actually contribute and help a team win that is trying to win, they're supposed to win 50 plus games. All I'm saying, and Otto Porter is a nice pickup for them. I actually really like him on that team. And he kind of helps fill those backup wing minutes behind Wiggins, who was better than anyone thought he was going to be last year.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't hate the team. I just to go like, you know, I'll bet they end up playing Iggy a bunch, even though Iggy is pretty cooked at this point in his career. And like, the whole thesis here is Clay's going to come back and be an approximation of Clay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think everyone, even the staunchest Warriors hater, would hope that he comes back and is an approximation of Clay.
Yeah,
but like,
he's the likable one on that team. He's got good vibes.
But the dude has completely shredded his lower body 2 years in a row. I mean, just a thorough destruction of the poor guy. Like, I mean,
like, you just don't believe in the healing power of CBD.
I guess not. You know, I don't know. I'm going to kind of, you know, I don't want to assume he's not going to be right. But if he's not right, then this team is still a bunch of kids or a bunch of dudes who are, you know, a little too old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe it was a Lord of the Rings quote. These men have seen too many winters or not enough.
I was not expecting that.
and like, that kind of feels like this roster. You know, you look down the line and other than like Damian Lee, it's like, you're either 35 or you're 22. Like, and like, I don't know. Like, it just, I'm going to be a little skeptical until I see them like actually be, cause like a 50 win team, like that's a really good team. Like, people forget that. Like, if they're going to be a 50 plus winning game team, they're going to be winning. Like, they should have like a +5 or +6, +7 point differential. I don't know. I see the road to it, and it's Clay's healthy, and everything unlocks around it.
And they don't play the young guys, and those guys basically play in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So, and when you've got guys that young, that's going to be a problem. Like, no one's going to, like, those dudes are not going to be happy playing in Santa Cruz at the pedigree they're at. So, like, I don't know. It just feels like a team that everyone's expecting to, like, snap right into place. And I actually kind of hope they do, because I think it's, like, that Warriors run at the end was super fun.
It's so much more fun if they're in the playoffs and then lose. Like,
so fun to root against them in that play-in game.
I want them to give hope only for it to be taken away. And that's really one of the key things that I'm hoping for this season. So I've already spoiled my pick for overachieving in the West and Brandon Clark. I'm going to go my underachiever now, Carter. And that's Michael Porter Jr.
Interesting.
I think he is going to make progress from what he did last season, 19 points. I think he's going to continue to be a good and efficient scorer, maybe get up to like that 23. But with Jamal Murray missing time, I think a lot of people are expecting him to make that superstar-like leap and really fill into that role. And I just don't know if he's going to be reliable enough for that, both from a health standpoint and also just, you know, like Denver's trying to win games. He makes questionable decisions at times. I'm assuming he's going to get a big contract here, a contract extension before the season starts. But I just don't know if he's necessarily going to make that star leap. I think he's going to make progress and be a very good player, but I just don't think he's going to be this Kevin Durant light presence on the Denver Nuggets, which seems to be kind of the feel that people are getting, that he is about to make that kind of a leap. And I just don't see it coming from him. Health is honestly one of the biggest parts in this, but even outside of that, even if he's as healthy as he was last season, I think it's still going to take a little more time with him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I get that, but I think I agree. I think that guy thrives when he has time to get into rhythm and has opportunity. Like, he's like a true volume bucket getter shooter, like where mm-hmm. the more he's shooting, the more he's affecting the game, and the less he's shooting, the less he's affecting the game. And that's why I think when we've seen him, and yeah, he was younger obviously and had less reps, but like that first playoff run where Malone wasn't playing him, and it was like, yeah, I get it, because if he's not out there and engaged, he's kind of not helpful,
right?
And like, but when he's engaged, it just feels like that kind of guy. Like, just I don't see what changes, I guess, for him. You know, mm-hmm. like, what can you kind of give me that? Like, what changes for him that makes you go, oh, yeah, that's why he's worse?
I don't think he's going to be worse. I think he's going to make progress from next season.
Okay.
I think he's going to increase
his
points.
You just don't think
he's
going to take a leap.
I don't think he's going to make that superstar leap. I think he.
See, I wasn't there yet anyway. So that's where, like, that's why I'm pushing back on this, because I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, like I've seen him mentioned as someone that's going to win MIP this year, and just kind of the consensus seems to be that he's going to make a massive, massive leap, and I think we're going to see progress from him. I don't think he's going to get worse. I just think relative to the expectations that are being set, I don't think he's going to necessarily live up to those.
That's fair. That's fair. Can I give you my overachiever?
Mm-hmm.
From the most boring team in the NBA. DeJounte Murray.
Oh, okay.
I kind of want to see this guy with the, similar to. Yeah.
So, you think the Pelicans are boring?
DeJounte Murray.
Oh,
on the Spurs.
Oh, my goodness. I was thinking Graham. Oh, my God.
What a mistake.
Wrong first and last.
Day. Yeah, jeez. You know what? Sometimes this happens.
You know, I think that, you know, it was similar, and it's funny because the two played together in Toronto, but similar to, you know, Memphis kind of taking the training wheels off by moving Jonas, I feel like the Spurs took the training wheels off by letting DeMar go.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think that backcourt of Murray and White are going to have to, this is kind of a, like, are you worth building around kind of year? And Murray is such a fun player defensively. I mean, he rebounds like a monster at the point guard position. I mean, 7 boards a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like he's a garbage playmaker either. I mean, he averaged 5.5 assists to 1.5 turnovers, like perfectly reasonable numbers, especially with DeRozan picking up a big playmaking burden on that team. Averaging 7 assists. Jeez, I forgot DeRozan averaged 7 assists. That's a lot. But yeah, you know, I just think that, like, when you look at a guy like that, you just go, okay, like, how. We're all pretty sure you're pretty good. This kind of feels like the year where we're going to find out he's pretty damn good.
I like
it. And I don't know if the wins are going to come for that team. It does feel like a team that is in, you know, pure rebuilding mode and have lost every veteran off the roster.
Mm-hmm.
But
great,
like, I just,
great, great season for the Cavs to own their second round pick.
Yeah, mwah. It is. If there's ever been a year to have the Spurs second round pick, it's this one. Maybe you get a little Spurs second round, mojo with it, with their history of wins there. But I like DeJounte Murray there.
That's a phenomenal pick. I don't really have a lot of notes on it. I think that's going to be one of those guys that really gets a real opportunity here, with DeRozan moving on and the changes that they've made. Yeah, great pick.
Spurs are such a weird team
because I feel like they haven't hit any home runs, but they just keep hitting like singles and doubles with everyone.
You know who that kind of sounds like? The Cleveland Cavaliers.
No.
We're waiting to see those guys turn into home runs. But as far as they've performed.
They're midway through the air. They're gone. Goodness. They are gone in that thin Colorado air. They are soaring outside of the park. Who's your underachiever?
This is a buzzkill take, but Chris Paul.
Oh.
He's going to get old soon. He's going to get old soon, and people are just assuming he's going to stay this way forever. But he is 36 years old. He'll turn 37. He's 6 foot nothing. Mm-hmm. He got hurt again. He's been getting hurt, and it just feels like this is the year where Devin Booker had better be the by a mile best player on the Suns if they want to stay where they are. I think he might enter the good role player phase of his career this year.
Yep. Yeah, and you hope that
Hale
Bridges and some of the other guys take a step forward, and that kind of minimizes him taking a step back.
It'd be cool to be wrong on this one, because it was super fun watching him do what he did last year.
It's crazy the longevity we're seeing from guys in the NBA now.
Especially that dude specifically. Like, LeBron being as good as he is, sure, like, he's way better than Chris Paul is right now, so it's like it's a different kind of good. But like,
have I mentioned on the pod he's the fourth oldest player in the NBA right now?
Chris Paul?
LeBron.
Or LeBron. But that's amazing and sound, but also makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's...
Bro, you should tweet that. You'd get you'd get a lot of engagement on that.
Oh, no. I saw it off of a tweet. Okay. I'm not stealing that.
Okay. That's fair. Well, like, you know, that's crazy to me. But, like, you look at Paul, like, Paul, there is no precedent for a 6 foot point guard who's not a particularly great athlete to be doing what he did last year. Mm-hmm. And like, I just feel like if he loses another 5%, it's over. You know, it's going to be a quick light bulb turning off moment. So while I don't love it saying it, that's my pick. Let's move to the East. Who you got as your overachiever?
I'm actually going to go underachiever first.
That's good, because I got mine already in the.
You won't be shocked at this, because it ties in, and it's also a short point guard, and that's Fred VanVleet. I think people are expecting him to take a big step forward with Lowry out. And I think
he's about as much as you're ever going to get from him. You know, he's kind of, and that's great, because he's more than hit his ceiling.
Right. I think he is going to put up similar numbers to what he did last year. I know he wasn't efficient last year. I think he might even drop off a little bit. I think this team is really, really, really going to struggle to score in the half court. And I mean, as he transitions from kind of combo guard, off ball point guard, sometimes initiator to full time point guard. I just think that he's going to be a disappointment and part of the reason why I'm low on Toronto.
That's fair. I'm there. And frankly, I'm going to take my inspiration as well from in the same place. I'm going to say Zach LaVine. I think that people think he is a superstar now.
What a shock that the teams we think are going to underachieve were low on
their best
their driving force.
I just think this guy's like pretty good. You know, I think he's a pretty good player that people think is very good. I think he was somewhere in between that last year. Mm-hmm. And like, I just think we're all assuming that's his new normal. And I feel like for dudes who don't have elite feel, which again, I think we all still agree on that, right? I'm not like alone on that note.
Yeah, I don't know how much matters though. Like, I really think
it has to matter. What are you talking about? He's the best player on the team. Like, maybe I'm just an old head basketball purist that like, yeah, I want everyone like to like be able to feel the game.
You don't like buckets.
I don't like buckets enough, and like, I don't feel like he reads the game at a high level. So if his bucket getting drops off a little bit, everything looks terrible. Or not
whatever
terrible,
you say,
but
nerd.
A lot worse.
Whatever you say, nerd.
I know.
Stick to your Google Sheets and whatever else.
I know. So yeah, I don't know, man. I just feel like maybe I'm big wrong. Maybe the Team USA like helped, you know, elevate that all these kind of intangibles.
I'm a big believer in the Team USA bump.
Yeah, I buy it, and I think there's something there. But for now, I'm going to bet on regression until I'm proven wrong. Who's your overachiever?
You know when people just like say something that they know it doesn't carry a lot of weight, just like something bland, like teachers deserve to be paid more, whatever, like applaud me. I'm going to do the same thing here. And I'm going to say Darius Garland.
I was going to say Darius Garland.
Like, you know, like,
I got to pick someone else.
I'm pandering to my base, and I resisted the urge to pick the Cavs as overachievers because I do believe that. But even like listening to their latest Hoop Collective when Tim McMahon's describing Garland as a undersized shooting guard, and oh, well, maybe the Cavs want John Wall because they don't necessarily believe in their guards and whatnot. Like, I think people slept on what he did last year, and the leap is coming. I think objectively, people like. I am so excited for this opening week of the season because you have Garland going against Morant, LaMelo Ball, and then Trae Young. And if that's his coming out party where he looks like he belongs in that group or is above players in that group, we're going to be cooking. We're going to be a really, really interesting team. So for me, I really think that Darius Garland is going to put an all-star caliber season. And when you have Sexton, who put up all-star caliber numbers last year, that's going to be a hell of a backcourt and really, I think, is going to catch some people by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I think it's a great pick. It was the one I was going to make.
You should have known. You should of all the ones that you thought you knew would be coming from me, you should have known that one.
I thought you were going to be. I thought I was actually going to be the one that ventured into Homer territory on this one. it looks like you beat me to the punch. I couldn't agree more, man. I think he is primed for a breakout. Nobody watched the Cavs last year that wasn't a Cavs fan, unless mm-hmm. they had to. So unless you watched the right game, unless you watched, that Spurs game or something, you might have left with, not the best idea what Darius Garland is. And, the fact that you got this whole team together, the fact that he's already tearing it up in Cleveland with the full squad, it just feels like the year that a breakout needs to happen. And maybe we're trying to will this into existence a little bit.
Oh, baby, it's happening. It's already occurred. We're just about to find out.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm hoping happens, and like that's always been the case here. Like we've always, I think the organization deep down knows that he has always been their ceiling raiser, mm-hmm. the guy who takes them to being like a bridge better than they are. You know what?
I'm fine with us both picking Garland. I feel like it's good for continuity here.
Sure.
Solidarity.
Yeah. So sure. I think, screw it. Darius Garland. Oh, yeah. He's gonna leap off the page this year.
Yeah, you hear that, listeners? Stand up and applaud us. We are pandering.
We're brave.
But you know what? I also believe it. I feel like
it is one of those spots where, like, we're gonna probably get teased for this, and I get it. But with that said, like, you know where I am on this stuff. I hate being called a mouthpiece or anything like that. And like, so for the fact that I'm like, I feel like it's almost extra credit in Darius's mm-hmm. favor, where it's like, I am not someone who wants to be the guy who picks Darius Garland on this, league-wide podcast, and I just can't help it. When mm-hmm. I'm looking through all these names, I go, yeah, I think it's going to be him.
I honestly find myself tempering some takes here in the preseason. Like, I almost feel like I'd be higher on the Cavs publicly if we didn't have this partnership sometimes, because I'm like, you know what? I want to really, like, I want to sit with these takes. I want to think about it. And you know what? I have to unleash my hot take. This is feel good season, Carter. This is the feel good season.
Hit me.
And my take is that the Cleveland Cavaliers will be better than the Charlotte Hornets next year.
Oh, that's a fun hot take.
I think last year Sexton and Rozier are basically a wash. I think Garland is going to be better than LaMelo next season.
Are you Hiraming this lineup comparison?
I a little bit. And you look at the front court, I take Allen, Mobley, Lowry over Plumlee, Washington, and Bridges. I like Washington and Bridges, but I think that the lack of depth that the Hornets have at center is going to be a bit of an issue. Like Plumlee and Kai Jones, I think that's going to be a problem. Gordon Hayward is obviously the big differentiating factor there. Cavs don't have a wing of his caliber, but he does miss time. LaMelo does miss time. And I have more confidence in the Cavs. I really like what the Hornets have done, and I think that they are going to be a rival in the way that the Wizards were when we had Kyrie and they had John Wall, and we kind of went through that. I think this is going to be the start of that with LaMelo and Garland. Garland being the veteran of the two by a season, I think he's going to have the edge. I think he's going to be the better player next year, and that is going to help propel the Cavs to a better record than the Hornets.
Oh, I like that hot take. That's a fun. It's a double homer.
We're ending strong.
I'm going to end on some grumpy shit.
Okay.
just take us in the exact opposite direction. I think the NBA, larger NBA free agent base are kind of being dorks, being losers. Like, do you really want to go be the 13th man for the Nets? Like, where is the, it used to be like, okay, so, you know, like, we always had really good teams, right? And it was like, you know, we're going to get one or two free agents that's going to get bought out or you know, be all, you know, near the end of their career, and they're going to go be the eighth man. But, like, some of these dudes are, like, actual NBA players who can play actual minutes that are signing up to be bench warmers.
Mm-hmm.
To play on these teams, to actually be out of the rotation.
Hey, listen.
And I'm like, what? Did something change where people don't want to play basketball anymore?
Carter. When you have that many old players, you know that guys are going to go down. You're going to get your shot. I get it.
But here's the thing: Brooklyn's not that old.
They've got some old knees on the bench.
The oldest player on the team is James Johnson at 34. Blake's 32.
Blake's knees are 42.
I get it. But the point is, like, there will be, like, some of these dudes, like Paul Millsap might collect DNPs in the playoffs.
Oh, no. Paul Millsap's going to play it. He's not losing games.
Griffin. Gosh, what's his freaking name?
He's playing over those two.
Claxton? Is he?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's 36? I think he's got more in the tank than
that. So he is the oldest player on the team, sorry. Yeah. He was signed since.
Look at you lying to me. Stop.
Point is, I just think, like, I don't know, man. I just feel like it used to be like, if I'm not going to be top eight, I'm not going to go ring chasing, or at least top nine. And I find this, like, is so annoying to me that any NBA player of consequence has signed with those two teams. If you are a minimum signing that has ever done anything, you have signed with those two teams.
Yeah, that's true.
It used to be that you might want to, like, go play game.
You know, there's wear and tear.
There's wear and tear.
I'm sore podcasting, man. I understand wanting to sit on the bench a little bit.
I don't know. It just feels like this offseason with the signing specifically, like, it used to be like, okay, the Warriors got one or two more people than maybe they should have. You know, in a normal, it feel like every single player has signed with those two teams.
I don't hate the take. I just think it's weird.
I just think it's weird, man. Like, I don't know.
No, you know, we were on such a good vibes ride.
I know,
and you
but
know
it's
what?
Fun.
Honestly,
it's still fun to roast people. So I think we ended on a fun vibe.
Let's be honest. Like, we understand the base here. I think as Cavs fans, hating on the Lakers and Nets is probably pretty safe territory.
And plus, anyone who listened to us that's this far into the podcast is a friend of the pod at this point.
That's a very good point. And if those friends of the pod want to support us, they can do so by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and help cook those books.
I think you forgot to say resubscribe at the end.
You know what?
please don't just unsubscribe.
Yeah, please resubscribe. And if you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can do so by sending a screenshot of your review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you guys choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you're staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.